sequentially from Canto 2, and where I ended up is where we're going to begin. Chapter 6, Purusha Sukta confirmed, and the verse will start with this text 42, 2642. And it's near the completion of the chapter. It goes through 46. So, Purusha Sukta confirmed. Step way back and describe what Srimad Bhagavatam is. In various places, the Bhagavatam, not only its glories, but what it really is. It's a commentary on Vedanta Sutra, natural commentary by Vyas. It presents a commentary on Gayatri Mantra, Satyam Parham Dhimahi. The word Dhimahi is a very special word. And it's used in relation to Gayatri Mantra, and the Bhagavatam in its first verse by Sanskrit innuendo is indicating that it is commentary on Gayatri, and elsewhere the Bhagavatam is described as being commentary on Gayatri. Is the Amala Purana. There's six pranas in goodness, six in passion, six in ignorance, and amongst the six in goodness, it's the spotless Purana, unmixed with the other modes, like Vishuddha Sattva, like that. Here in this chapter, it's making a commentary on Purusha Sukta. Purusha Sukta. Sukta means prayers or glorifications of Purusha. It's the avatars of Vishnu that carry out the function of creation. It's found in Rig Veda, Purusha Sukta mantras. So this is a commentary on the Purusha Sukta mantras. And it's done in Puranic form. That is, it's a discussion between two personalities. In this case, Narada is asking Lord Brahma a series of questions. Brahma is supplying the answers to those questions, confirming what is the ultimate source of everything, where do the ingredients come from, where does the plan come from, where does the great impetus come from? And he who certainly should know, because he's doing it all, Brahma, the original learned person in the universe, describes the process of creation. And so in the Purusha Sukta mantras, as well as here, there is a Lord who's beyond this created realm, Lord of Vaikuntha. For the purpose of expansion, the Lord of Vaikuntha expands himself as the Mahavishnu and does different functions. So it's described once, it's described again, and now just in little essence verses, it's being summarized for the third time. So that's where we are. The immediate preceding verses, Brahma has said in sequence, I've answered your question, and everything that I've said is perfectly correct. The reason it's perfectly correct is because I've taken shelter of the lotus feet, the all-powerful Supreme Lord, and he's protecting my words so that they're perfect. My senses are controlled, and my mind is controlled because he's controlling them. And I've submitted myself to him. Then he turns around and says, no one can know him perfectly. The finite cannot know the infinite perfectly. But to some extent one can know the infinite, proportionate to one's advancement in devotional service, or several proportionate to one's surrender. Therefore one should surrender. And there isn't some other means to know the Lord other than that means. Therefore, Narada, by all means, surrender. And then he starts once again glorifying the Supreme Lord and describing that process. The Lord is beyond this created realm, this quality, that quality, that quality, this quality. So that when we're going, the next chapter is hearing about the incarnations of the Lord. When we hear about the Lord who is beyond this creation, appearing within this creation, we don't get confused, thinking, oh, he's like one of us. Or, this is just mythology. It's the omnipotent, the Lord who has inconceivable potencies. His potencies are not knowable fully, but we must accept that he has inconceivable potencies because he has them, and he's a person. And he exhibits them sometimes. Sometimes doesn't exhibit them, or doesn't exhibit fullness of them. He's absolutely purna brahmitam, he's absolutely full. So, the immediate previous verse, he was describing Lord beyond the creation, and then once again reiterates how it is possible for one to understand that which is beyond the conception of the mind and beyond the purview of the senses. There's means in this. He describes it in terms of the qualities of the person to compare with or complement the surrender method, the surrender and devotional service method that he described. Because only one who is surrendered and engaged in devotional service can have those qualities. So, now here in this verse, he's for the third time in the chapter, giving, in this case, just little bullet points, Karna Daksha Vishnu, Garbha Daksha Vishnu, Shira Daksha Vishnu, the chapter closes. So it's Purusha Sukta confirmed. Where does everything come from? How does it work? How does this fit with that? What's the Sambandhagyan? What's the relationship of stuff with their creator? And who's the ultimate creator? Just as Brahma is doing some creating, and we are also doing some create, or whatever it is that we're doing. Somebody's building a road, and someone's, you know, creating a software program, and we're all creating something. But it's a subordinate creation to the original creator. Okay, so now text 42. I'm going to read because I didn't prepare anything. Karna Dakshai Vishnu is the first incarnation of the Supreme Lord. And he's the master of eternal time, space, cause and effect, mind, the elements, material ego, the modes of nature, the senses, the universal form, Garbha Dakshai Vishnu, and everything. The sum total of all living beings moving and non-moving. Report. That the material creation is not permanent has been discussed many times here and before. The material creation is but a temporary exhibition of the material energy of the Almighty God. This material manifestation is necessary to give a chance to the conditioned souls who are unwilling to associate with the Lord in the relationship of loving transcendental service. Such unwilling conditioned souls are not allowed to enter into the liberated life of spiritual existence because at heart they're not willing to serve. So previously there was discussion about everyone surrenders, voluntarily or involuntarily. We're surrendering to the Lord or we're surrendering to his external energy, but we're all surrendering. We're all serving this way or that way, but we're all serving. So the external energy is there, manifested for the sake of those that don't want the internal energy. They're unwilling to serve. Instead, they want to enjoy themselves as imitation gods, And the entities are constitutionally eternal servitors of the Lord. But some of them, because of misusing their independence, do not wish to serve. Therefore, they are allowed to enjoy the material nature, which is called maya, or illusion. It is called illusion because the living entities, under the clutches of maya, are not factually enjoyers, although they think that they are being illusioned by maya. Such illusioned living entities are given a chance at intervals to rectify the perverted mentality of becoming false masters of the eternal nature, and they are imparted lessons from the Vedas about their eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord Krishna. Vedaischa sarvair aham eva vedyah. So temporary creation of the material manifestation is an exhibition of the material energy of the Lord. And to manage the whole show, the Supreme Lord incarnates himself as the Karana Dakshai Vishnu, just as a magistrate is deputed by the government to manage affairs temporarily. This Karana Dakshai Vishnu causes the manifestation of material creation by looking over his material energy. Sa Aikata. In the first volume of this book, we have already discussed, to some extent, the explanation of the verse Jagrahe Purusham Rupam. The duration of the illusory play of material creation is called Kalpa, and we have already discussed the creations taking place in Kalpa after Kalpa. Kalpa is a day of Brahma. By his incarnation and potential activities, the complete ingredients of creation, namely time, space, cause, result, mind, gross and subtle elements, and their interactional modes of nature, good dispassion and ignorance, and then the senses and their reservoir source, the gigantic universal form, as the second incarnation, Garbhadakshini Vishnu, and all living beings moving and standing, which come out of the second incarnation, all became manifested. And this is just exactly what it says in Purusha Sukta mantras. Sequentially, these things take place. Ultimately, all these creative elements and the creation itself are but potential manifestations of the Supreme Lord. Semicolon. There is nothing independent of the control of the Supreme Being. This first incarnation of the material creation, namely Karana Dakshai Vishnu, is the plenary part of the original personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, as described in Brahma Samhita 548 as follows. Yasyai kanishvatim kalmatavalambhya jivanti loma vilaja jagadandanataha Vishnur Mahan Mahavishnu Vishnur Mahan Saiha Yasya Kala Vishesho Govindamadi Purusham Taham Bhajami. Conclusion. All the innumerable universes are maintained only during the breathing period of Mahavishnu or Karna Dakshai Vishnu, who is only a plenary part of Govinda, the original personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. The Purusha Sukta mantras are traditional mantras chanted by Vaishnavas in various lines of specific succession. Because they're strictly Vedic mantras and they're very clearly describing the supremacy of the personality of Godhead. Where there are other portions within the Vedic mantras that they're offering propitiations unto the various devas. That section is called the Karmakanda section, and it's for the fulfillment of the desires of the living entities. So like in the Purusha Sukta mantras, as is being described here, the Supreme Lord, the spiritual world, for the purpose of creation, expands himself as Mahavishnu, who then glances over, just like we know the description, he glances over the ingredients, and then these golden orbs make their appearance from his body. The ingredients are churned from the ingredients then form the universes. And then Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, and then Garbhajakshaya Vishnu expands the varieties of living entities, all of whom are, seems to say here, all of whom are dependent upon the Supreme Lord. And then they have their various varnas and ashrams for the purpose of serving the Supreme Lord. And then it goes into, the other parts of the Vedas go into, now these living entities, to serve the Supreme Lord, they have their desires, and then they've got a lot of desires, so there's a lot of information how they can fill their desires. That's the karmakant portion of the Vedas. But it's something like a chandelier. It's held by one spot, and then the chandelier expands and can become, you know, very, very beautiful and attractive and even can spin around. But it's suspended by one point. And the Purusha Sukta Mandas are looking at that one point and describing the sarva, the principal creation, the Lord manifesting the cosmic situation. And this sarga, to a lesser degree, but Brahma, so Brahma's confirming, yep, sarga, that's what the Lord does, and then I do the visarga. Because Brahma wasn't sure. Or at least in the commentary, Aradarius say, he was like Arjuna, who was unsure of his duty, because he was induced to be like that by Krishna, so Krishna could speak Bhagavad Gita. Narada was also induced to not be clear about the Lord's position, about Lord Brahma's position, and so he asked, and he got a long answer. So several things are being purposefully, repeatedly explained. So it's really clear, there's no question. Original cause is one, and that original cause, just like the Brahma Samhita, original cause is Govinda. Govinda's first expansion is this Mahavishnu, so on. The Purusha Sukta mantras indicate like that. Personality of Godhead is Krishna. So one who worships Vishnu is also worshiping Krishna because he has the same tattva. Then one might argue, as some argue, well, then if that's the case, then anything that comes from Krishna is also Krishna. And in one sense, yes, in another sense, no. And that's discussed in this chapter. The energy of the sun cannot be separated from the sun, or you don't have energy of the sun minus the sun. So it's inseparable. There's a oneness between the energy of the sun and the sun. Similarly, there's a oneness between the energy of creation and the creator. They're not separable. You don't have creations without a creator. You don't have a creator without creations. He creates. That's what makes him a creator. So the energies, all these things listed here, they are one with Krishna. But that is not to say they are Krishna. They're one with Krishna, but different from Krishna. Chintabhidabheda tattva. To understand Purusha Sukta properly, one has to have a clear understanding of sambandh gyan, the relationship between the energies of the energetic and the energetic. We need to make a distinction. So in different ways that distinction is made by different Vaishnava teachings. But those that aren't Vaishnavas, they take it, just see, it's one. It's all one. We knew it all along. It's all one. There are other statements in the Purusha Sukta prayers and in Brahma's explanation of the Purusha Sukta prayers that deliberately make it clear there is also difference. There's difference between, and this is Madhvacharya's teaching, there's difference between living entities and God. There's difference between matter and the living entities. The difference between matter and God. The difference between living entities and living entities. The differences between matter and matter. Primordially. Always. So, Lord Chaitanya in his Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva philosophy combined, there's difference and there's oneness simultaneously. So we can look at it from the oneness perspective, or we can look at it from the difference perspective, or we can understand inconceivably there's oneness and difference. The word inconceivable is used because the mind cannot hold both at the same time, just due to the limitations of the mind. The mind is a binary processor. It's a one or it's a zero, and binary processors don't recognize simultaneous one and zero. It's got to go this way or that way. So inconceivable to the mind, but knowable in the heart of the devotee. In fact, it's one of Krishna's glories, Hari Bol Krishna, because he's simultaneously one and different, or all things are simultaneously one and different from him. Either way you want to say it. And that's very important. In the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam, to properly understand the Purusha Sukta Mantras and the relationship of Mahavishnu being... Mahavishnu is also a Chinta Beta Beta Tattva. This is discussed by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Amnaya Sutras. Everything, even Vishnu Tattvas, everything including Vishnu Tattvas, are simultaneously one with and different from the Lord. Now, how Mahavishnu is different from the Lord versus how matter is different from the Lord, that's also different. But there is this simultaneous oneness and difference relationship of all things with God. And then there's statements here that very explicitly say, and there's not a third thing. Or there is no, stated in different ways, but there is no creation. Excuse me, there is no void in God's creation. If there was void in God's creation, there's something that's apart from God. But there's nothing apart from God. Or everything that exists is in relation to God. Well, supposing you have non-existence, and it's just theoretical, there is no such thing. What's non-existence? What's void? Something that exists apart from God, that's what non-existence is. Doesn't exist. And Buddhist philosophy is shunyavad. What exists? Nothing. So what's going on now? Nothing. You just think there's something going on, and the stage of ultimate enlightenment is to realize nothing's going on. Void. Merge with the void, and that's the goal of Buddha's teachings. That's not very attractive. But we spent significant time in Hyderabad discussing the impersonalist idea, and then turned the scientist, which is just a modern mock-up of impersonalism and voidism, where impersonalism says all there is Brahman, and science says all there is matter, and laws that by which matter operates, and that's all that is. So before creation there was matter, after annihilation there's only matter, and now that's all that there is matter. So nothing really matters. That's all there is matter. All that's happening is just matter and laws of nature bumping into each other. Of course they're very aggressively bumping into the theists, and the theists have their concerns with the atheistic scientists and the impersonalists and those that would like to dismiss the personality of God. So Brahma is explaining that happens when one doesn't have control of the mind and senses. Prashanta. When there's desires in the heart, then one is not peaceful. One's mind is agitated by those desires. And there's categories of desires. There's material desires. There's bhakti. Mukti Siddhi Kami Sakale Ashanta Lord Chaitanya taught. Desire, I want material enjoyment. It agitates the heart. Or I want mystic siddhis. They're just material affections that agitates mind. I want out of here. I don't like here anymore. I want out. I want liberation. That agitates the mind. And it's a material desire. It's negation of material, which is flip side of the same thing. Head, tails. It's the same coin. So, prajnanta is possible for one who has no desires apart from Krishna. And one who has no desires apart from Krishna, the mind is peaceful. Even when there is difficulty, some obstacle, some something, some perturbance in the waves of the material energy, one understands my purpose doesn't change. The shelter of the Supreme Lord, lotus feet, they're accessible, regardless of what the material energy is doing or not doing. And therefore, the senses are also under control, and such a person, to some degree, can understand the Supreme Lord. But those who don't have the condition, yan maya or tan maya, his external energy covers that living entity. And tira dhyeta, the Lord, poof, he disappears. It's not like he goes out of existence, but one cannot perceive him, or even a little bit know him. And viplutam, one's perception of reality becomes distorted. Viplutam, this viplutam appears in the first canto. Destroyed, distorted. Jan aga viplavam. So, that's a reality set that non-devotees, unfortunately, have. The whammy of eternal energy stuns them. They become bewildered. They still see, but they see in a distorted way. The gods are the picture. But for one who is like Lord Brahma, surrendered to and the Lord's lotus feet, engaged in his service, grasping firmly to the Lord's lotus feet, then these truths, at least some degree, can be understood. So it's on the strength of devotion and proper hearing that we can, to some degree, grasp all of this. All the ingredients and the creations that are made from those ingredients are from the Lord. And He is different. He is differently situated. This is the most confidential knowledge found in Bhagavad Gita in the 9th chapter. I'm within everything and outside of everything. Prabhupada has explained that. The Lord is, He is almighty. He is within everything. He covers everything. And He is everything. And He has His own existence. He's tooting on His flute, Goloka Vrindavan, smiling. Effortlessly doing nothing. But everything happens under His power. Krishna is amazing. So those are nice ideas, sitting peacefully in a room here together. And then put on our work clothes and go to the office. And what happened? We had a nice class this morning, and there's all this energy moving around, and people that, you know, are thinking anything like that, what we heard in the class this morning. So that's the challenge of a devotional life, to stay through the hearing process, to stay fixed. To stay fixed in properly seeing, just, you know, in any direction you look, there's this sea of material energy. Look this way, look that way, look behind you, look above you, look below you. Everywhere you look, there's this material energy. So it's important to properly understand, what is this place that we're in? What's the relationship of this place to wherever it came from? If we can, if there's at least some attachment to the Supreme, then to some degree, to that degree, we won't see the situation as an opportunity for self-edification, meaning I like it, I don't like it. It makes me happy, it doesn't make me happy. It's meant for my pleasure because I'm Lord, and it doesn't suit me, so I want to change it or remove myself because it doesn't suit me. I'm controller. Ishwar aham, aham bhogi, and so forth. It's important application-wise to fix consciousness upon Krishna, and then when you go out the door, when the external circumstances change and then change and then change and then change, your consciousness remains unchanged. Fixing the absolute truth because of attachment to Krishna. It's practical, is what I mean to say. It's not abstract information that you just put in your information basket and then walk on the street. Don't pay any attention until someone calls upon you, hey, what's in your information basket? And you show them. Then you put it back and go on, oblivious to the spiritual reality of life. It's meant, I mean to say, it's meant to be applied. And the way to apply it, and to pay the how-to question, the way to apply it is becoming attached to Krishna. And when you're attached to a person, naturally you think of the person that you're attached to. And you think of, in Krishna's case, you think of Krishna means this place. This is Krishna's place. It's his external energy, but it's his place. It belongs to him. It's his energy. And when he's ready, it just went away. Or any part of its configuration. A slight modification on Krishna's side, and it changes. Maya Dyakshina Prakriti. Suyate Sacharacharam. Completely under his direction. And that's reality. So let me serve that person. Not like so I can get some favors, because he's the controller. Just as he is who he is. I'm this little tiny entity that's his part and parcel. Let me serve him. So one can stay fixed in service mood in the various circumstances of life. It doesn't change because you go out the door and go to the office. You stay fixed in Krishna's service. Because that's who you are. That's who he is. He's the master, we're the servant. We can serve this way, we can serve that way. It's nice to serve this way. But we have other desires, and so we go and do other things too. But we should do that in service of Krishna, because he's the master, we're the servant. And that's just like where it begins. In course of time, the relationship servant to master grows and becomes more intimate. And it's not just because he's the master, because there's a loving relationship. And because of that loving relationship, it becomes more intimate, and more intimate. Then the external situation becomes less and less important, and more is just the happiness that Krishna derives. As a result, the happiness we derive in that relationship of serving Krishna. That's our way of life. But it has to start somewhere. It starts with this hearing process. And hearing in a inquisitive spirit. What is it that Brahma is trying to communicate here? Brahma wants to illuminate the heart of Narada. What's that illumination he wants to put in his heart? And Vyas wants to bring that sublime message. Shukadeva Goswami wants to illumine the heart of Maharaj Pariksit. What is that light? By our ears we can receive that illumination. And by hearing, cleanse and become purified and become fixed in our understanding of Krishna and our attachment for Krishna, staying fixed in Krishna consciousness. Any questions? A little late for morning class. 2.5 hours difference where I came from, so it's right on schedule. Something? Yes. How can we see voidum? What are the symptoms? Speak slower. What are the symptoms of what? Tendencies of voidism within us. Interesting question. Well, put it in the positive sense is the tendency of voidism is to not see lotus feet of Krishna. Because when you don't see access to Krishna, what's there? There's matter. Incarnations of matter. Then you know, whatever that means, there's no shelter. The one, imagine it, you know, a dependent child that had no shelter. That's fearful. And so, Prabhupada describes in Bhagavad Gita, born of fear, what takes shelter of, it doesn't matter. There is nothing. Frustration and fear. Frustration. Everywhere you turn, it's let there be nothing. So, symptom of our impersonalism is not seeing and therefore not taking shelter of Krishna. That itself is impersonalism and voidism. There may be some ideology that goes with it, but that's that hollowness, that emptiness, no shelter. And likewise, how we view ultimate reality, it's how we view each other, how we interact and deal with each other. Do we see or consciously acknowledge Krishna is in the heart and of this person in front of me? And amongst all living entities, this devotee is trying to take shelter of Krishna. So they're very special. You see, one striving for Krishna and at least acknowledging Krishna is in the heart of that person. When that's absent, then our dealings likewise become, to a degree, impersonal. Maybe dutiful, maybe nice, maybe sometimes not nice, because there's no shelter. There's nothing to sustain and support. So it's a free fall. And you know, you try your best. But best is sometimes not good. For example, if it's specifically with impersonalism. In our temple in St. Louis, we have a Govinda's restaurant. And one of the things they have done in Govinda's restaurant to encourage kind of alternative lifestyle people, they have a little table. People can put this literature, that literature. So someone brought a Buddhist literature. Yeah, like they're, you know, newsletter or something. But just was flipping through it, looking at it. And the headlines, kind of a little box with graphics, kind of bring to your attention. The ultimate reality is nonviolence, something like that. Compassion and nonviolence. So what's the standard of what's compassion? And what's the standard of what's nonviolence? It may mean very different things to a whole variety of different people. So that's one problem or shortcoming. And another is, you can pick it up and leave it, and what's the consequence? Because it's not a person. It's just a reality. Or, you know, according to that doctrine. And what's going to keep me there is another thing. So there's no person. Then another individual I know, they were practicing Krishna consciousness, found some difficulty personally in practicing Krishna consciousness, so they took up some kind of martial arts discipline. Taichi or whatever those different things are. And they really got into it. So I met them and so that's nice. You're feeling strong. Your mental strength is there. You're feeling energized. You're feeling good. You're feeling, you know, but where's God in all this? You know, whatever you're doing, that's nice. Make sure that you don't, that God doesn't sift right through your fingers, because let your whole life pass in that way and it's void. You can see material, but it's, materialism is voidism. Material scientists are voidists or impersonalists at best. So that's the sum of the implication. Voidism. So there's hardcore voidists, and then there's just generic run-of-the-mill voidists. But behind the generic run-of-the-mill materialists and so forth, it's even there may be some idea of, quote, God. Just yesterday, someone came to the evening program in Hyderabad, and he came afterwards and said, I'm from Islam tradition, and I'd really like to know what's the difference and similarities between Krishna and Allah. And I said, I don't really know so much about Allah. But I'd be frank with you and say that Krishna is clearly person, and Allah seems to me to mean a lot of different things for a lot of different people. But it's not so clearly a person. Although he's someone you pray to and you call his name and things like that. What's his form? What are his activities? What are the types of loving relations that exist with him? What is his abode? What's it like? So minus those things to the degree, it's impersonal. Or take it further, in his more literal sense, in his void. There's not, it's a semantical difference, but a fundamental difference between impersonalism and voidism. Slight variation in nomenclature, essentially the same thing, according to what Lord Chaitanya taught. The cover of Buddhism is impersonalism. Krishna disappears. No shelter. It's a free fall. And it's also a free for all. Anyone, whatever you can mount a good case, and then you know you got your democratic right to have your idea of what's what. You own somebody again. The relationship of all things with nothingness. What's the ultimate shelter? Something else? Yes. Yes, in parts and parts. What does it actually mean to say part and parcel? My sense, if somebody else may have a different sense, is that to establish the teaching of Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada created a certain terminology so that it's like fresh slate. So that we would, you know, a thoughtful person would ask, what does that mean? And just by usage, that's how words derive their meaning, how people use them, more than exactly what it says. So, part, this is my sense, never heard a definition, Prabhupada created that term to indicate it's a part, but it's also connected to the whole. Part and parcel. That's my sense. Part but not separated from the whole. It's a parcel of the whole. That's part and parcel. you know, Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's not a common term. What do you mean? God the person. And kind of like, from the more conventional sense, Fountainhead, the source of Godhead, Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, again, by repeated usage, a combinations of sounds are taken to have a certain meaning. Something's... Yes? But we don't surrender to Krishna, that's some kind of impersonal tendency. Sure. Sure. It's the default mode. It can be stronger. It can be overt rebellion. But just not surrendering, that's impersonal. I'm okay, you're okay. That we don't surrender. And I'm okay, you're okay. Impersonal. It's nice and personal. I'm okay, you're okay. Something else? Yes. You're part and parcel. Krishna says that, yeah. You're what? Eternally. No. Well, illusion is to think otherwise, and that's a waste of time. But it's just illusion. We're still part and parcel, even we're thinking otherwise. In illusion. But yes, it's a waste of time. I don't fathom your confusion here. It's okay? If this is the eternal situation, why not? He's the master. He's unlimited and you're limited. It's natural. The other is unnatural. Supposing somebody who everybody here thought was, supposing the dean of the college was to come pay a visit here. What will we do? Make an arrangement to receive him nicely. Please him. Have a nice meal, etc. What does one do in the presence of a great person? It's natural. All of so many arrangements for my visit. It's natural. What to speak of the person who I and we all are serving? You serve them. We don't have to wait for them to come pay a visit. Because the whole place is theirs anyways. We're the visitor in their place. Okay, he's happy now. Anything else? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.